This episode is brought to you by Seems Easy Record Sleeve Repair Strips. If you collect used records, you need some Seems Easy strips handy for record sleeve repair. They're super easy to use and repair those seam splits to make them like new.
Ask your record store for Seems Easy or go to SeemsEasy.com.
Seems Easy with two Z's. SeemsEasy.com. And now, on with the show. Well, hey, everyone, it's Nate. Welcome to episode 355 of The Vinyl Guide, the podcast for record collectors and music nerds. And today we've got an absolute legend on the show, Mr. East Bay Ray of Dead Kennedys. And today, Ray and I are talking all about the new 2022 remix of the Dead Kennedys' debut album, Fresh Fruit for Rotting Vegetables. Now, I know Dead Kennedys strike up lots of emotions in people's, as they are such a beloved band, and the split in history seems to be quite polarizing for fans. And I totally get it. Would I like to see a classic DK lineup with Jello? Absolutely. Will I ever get the chance? Most definitely no. They've regularly had opportunities to reform, and they just couldn't make it work. They're that far apart. And here on the show, we've had multiple members. We've had Klaus on the show years ago, episode 23. We've had Jello on the show, episode 160. Both have a view, both have their stories, and certainly we're not here to take sides. What I am here to do today is to talk to East Bay Ray about the 2022 remix of the Dead Kennedys' seminal album, Fresh Fruit for Rotting Vegetables, which, in my opinion, the 2022 remix is a very worthy listen. That Fresh Fruit album helped define me long ago. It's a record that I hold very dear, and in my opinion, the current day Dead Kennedys, under the stewardship of Ray and Klaus, have put together a package that is respectful for the past while also modernizing the sonics of the original music. Nothing has been added. Nothing has been taken away. It's the same original instruments and recordings, but just treated with a modern sonic sensibility and clarity that likely wasn't possible back in 1980. And I like to think of it like this. It's the same masterpiece painting, but they've removed the smudges from our glasses, so now we can enjoy it with additional clarity and definition. Now, in this new Fresh Fruit package, they've also included the original poster, the original artwork, a few minor differences, which we discuss, and the addition of a booklet with pictures and information on the legacy of the Fresh Fruit album. And if you'd like to hear the difference, just pop in the old mix in your streaming services and then listen to the new mix right afterward. You can A/B them right away. Both versions will continue to coexist, and you could make up your own mind which sounds best for you. Okay, so to all you newcomers to the Vinyl Guide show, welcome, welcome, welcome. Hope you enjoy the interview. If you do, please follow us and subscribe to this podcast. You'll hear many, many, many more episodes and interviews like Brian Baker of Bad Religion and Minor Threat, episode 351 of The Vinyl Guide. Jim Rulin and I talk about the rise and fall of SST Records, episode 332. Amel and the Sniffers, all four of them were on the show, episode 301. Eerie Vaughn of Sam Hain, Danzig, Misfits, episodes 286 and 287. Ian MacKay of Minor Threat, Fugazi, Discord Records, episodes 281 and 282, and lots, lots, lots more. Subscribe or follow the Vinyl Guide podcast for free. Scroll, download, listen, and enjoy. And with that, let's get on the horn with Mr. East Bay Ray of Dead Kennedys. All right, this week on The Vinyl Guide, we are pleased to have a Dead Kennedy, East Bay Ray. How are you today, Ray?
I'm good. I'm good.
Excellent. By the way, is that the singular form of a member of the Dead Kennedys? You are alone, you are a Dead Kennedy?
I don't know. I haven't thought about it that far. I don't know. I usually say East Bay Ray, guitar player for the Dead Kennedys.
Okay. Okay. Is it the, I thought it was just Dead Kennedys. It's not the Dead Kennedys, right?
Oh, well, that would be the with the small t.
Oh, got it. Okay.
Yes, you are correct. It's not part of the name. Okay. But in a sentence, sometimes it shows up. So it could be East Bay Ray of Dead Kennedys, I guess. proper English. I did the, speaking of nerd, I don't know if you want to use this, but when we were working on the artwork for the LP and the CD, the issue came up of whether it's the initials DKS or DK. And what I figured out that it's DKS when you're talking about the band, a noun, and it's DK when you use it as an adjective, as in a DK t-shirt.
Oh, okay.
Or in this case, a DK vinyl record.
Right. Okay.
Well, otherwise it sounds possessive. DK's vinyl record.
Well, welcome everyone to our English lesson.
Well, it's not a lesson. It's just something the proofreader and I kind of decided upon.
So Dead Kennedys have been such a formidable band for so long, and they influenced so many people, myself included. I think my brain is wired totally different because I was a fan of the band so many years ago and consumed and enjoyed what you guys were saying, and really made me think. Your band made advocacy fun.
Yes, made fun. We have some humor in there.
Absolutely. Yeah, it didn't make it boring.
I think just to open expand your mind a bit. I mean, the reason the stuff is still around today, because there was a lot of bands that did advocacy and politics back in the day. Mm-hmm. It's not just the lyrics, it's the music.
Oh, 100%.
The band played outside the usual punk rock box.
Yeah. The whole, you know, notion of three chords is totally out the window when it comes to bands like Dead Kennedys. Very sophisticated. And it actually really kind of shows this new remix. And I don't know about you, Ray. You know, there's a lot of skepticism about remixes. I'm a fan of them. I think if there was a popular set of songs or an album, I'd like to hear it from a different angle. And in listening to this new remix, it's like the blankets came off of my speaker from the version of Fresh Fruit I've been listening to for years.
Yeah, well, that was the goal. I mean, you know, at the time we did the best we could, and we had a very low budget, and we weren't that experienced, and we did the best of good, and it came out great considering. But since then, you know, people in the band, most of the people in the band, like, I don't even listen to it because it was so kind of boxy sounding and veiled, like you said. And to be, you know, Klaus and I'd always talk, boy, you know, it'd be nice to remix this, but people aren't interested in them. And the skepticism, to be honest, we were very, very skeptical. It was the record label brought up the idea, like, what about a remix? And we went, oh, well, maybe. And then, you know, we talked to our manager, talked to different mixers, and Chris Lord Alge was like a big fan of the band and wanted to do it. So what we did, at least, we just sent them one song to see if it was even worth doing, Chemical Warfare. And Chemical Warfare came back, and it's just like, oh, wow. And like what I say, it went from two-dimensional to three-dimensional. But the plane's the same. I mean, the original, basically, it's the original. It's from the 16 track. It's the original plane. Nothing added, nothing taken away. One metaphor I use, or maybe it's a simile if we want to get more English nerdism. It's like looking at like a quartz crystal. You can look through one facet, but then you can turn it around and look through another facet. So you're looking at the same thing, but from a different direction, so to speak.
Yeah. There's this frequency range that I've always noticed seems to have held the guitars and the voice. And here there seems to be a greater separation of that. I think, and that's probably something only time and wisdom and modern tools could have done. So, look, the old version still exists for the purists, but this new version, I think, is a really interesting and, you know, a great thing to add to the collection.
Yeah, actually, I think, I mean, a lot of it has to do with Chris Lord-Alge's experience and talent. Mm-hmm. Because basically, his studio, unfortunately, didn't get to be in the room with him because of COVID. But he used a lot of analog gear, you know. So the 16-track tape was transferred to digital files. But what he does is he plays the digital files through analog equipment. So there's, you know, old compressors and old reverbs and stuff that he uses. So I don't think it's so much the equipment, though he does have top of the line vintage equipment, very, very expensive, but so do a lot of other people. But I think it was really his talent and his, affinity with like punk rock. I mean, he's mixed a lot of stuff, but, you know, when he was a kid, you know, punk rock was one of the musics that he liked.
If I had to pick out a name of who would do a remix of Dead Kennedys, Chris Lord-Alge would not have been near the top of the list. he's done a great job, but he seems to be a unique pick. How was he the choice?
Well, actually, originally when the label said they wanted to do it, you know, we were thinking of some engineers locally, people that we could afford in our budget, so to speak. And then our manager suggests, well, why don't we ask some of the A-list producers and see if anybody's interested? He asked Bob Clearmountain. You're familiar with him?
Yep.
But he was working with Fleetwood Mac at the time. And then Chris Lord-Alge came back and said, yeah, I'm available to do it. But, you know, so we sent him the audition thing. One of the things is Chris Lord-Alge does have experience with Green Day.
Right.
Like American Idiot is very, very, very well mixed. He's also kind of has a reputation for a part of his career of he has a reputation for using a lot of compression.
Mm-hmm.
So we were concerned about that, but he's kind of become more sophisticated and more nuanced. You know, I mean, that I think that the lot of compression kind of made him, a well-known name. But he's moved on from that, and I think that this mix was, you know, doesn't have that loudness war thing. Is that I guess it's so big 10, 15 years ago,
especially on the vinyl. Now I was lucky enough to grab a copy yesterday, and
you got it. Oh,
I do. Okay. I do. I found a record shop that was willing to get it to me before the release date.
It's not supposed to come out until tomorrow, September 30th.
I know. Well, I happen to
you
know a few
people. You must be a good customer. You must be a very good customer.
I am. And I know how to keep a secret, apparently. So,
yeah, this is going to be going to. You're going to do this interview after the September 30th?
Of course. And what I would do is encourage people. There's a couple songs on streaming. I think Kill the Poor and Chemical Warfare. Well, by the time they hear this, the whole album's going to be on streaming. Just listen to one version. The old version's still up there. And just A-B it. And you could tell the difference. It's quite remarkable.
Yeah, I think from my experience, the biggest difference is Chemical Warfare. That seems to be kind of that was the first mix that Chris Lord-Alge did, and then it's the last song on the first vinyl side.
Right.
But those really have those you can really tell. I mean, when I had friends come over that are not necessarily audio heads, golden ears, I would play them. Everybody heard it immediately.
Yeah.
Yeah, the difference. But I also, but I understand people, when you're going through your hormonal change as a teenager, 13, the music you hear becomes ingrained in your DNA. So that's why the original is, Klaus and I demanded that the original stay out and still be available.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the same performances, just remixed a bit differently.
Yeah, it's not real. Nowadays a remix tends to mean something different in the sense that they maybe add a drum machine or keyboards and take things out. It's not a remix in that sense. It's a mix of the 16 original tracks, the original playing, that exact same notes and playing that was on the original.
It's even still got some of Ted's flubbed drum lines in there. That so
thank you for not playing out mine.
That's part of the charm, though. That's part of the charm is that missed cue. It's like, oh yes, you know, it would be strange without it. Now, when it comes to the master tapes, do you have all the master tapes of all the DK stuff?
Yes, I do. Yeah.
Okay. Do. All right.
I'm the recording cat, you know.
Okay. So you've got all the multi-tracks. Is there anything missing from that?
Anything missing?
Yeah.
Not that I recall. I mean, I have both versions of the In God We Trust.
Okay.
The first version, there was that period when the recording tape was flaking.
That's
And we went and actually re-recorded the whole record, and that's what was released. Though I think we did bake the tape. Mm-hmm. You can bake it in the adhesive, go, and we did run off, get a digital file from it.
Oh.
And actually we used it on a DVD someplace. I mixed it and put it out in a DVD, but I guess it actually could be released as an totally alternate, you know, different plane at a different time. I'll have to check the fidelity, but I think the baking of the tape and the transfer came off really, really well. We didn't know about that at the time. We just re-recorded it.
Right. So just as a reminder, I believe the story is you guys were going into the studio to record. In the process of recording, you noticed you had a faulty tape. Is that right?
Well, I think we were done with the recording. Okay. Or maybe doing overdubs, but as you played the tape, the little stuff would flake off. So I think we stopped playing it and booked another studio in a new reel of tape.
Got it. Okay. So there's two versions of In God We Trust.
But, you know, when you're doing overdubs, you have to play the tape back and forth all the time.
Right.
And, Biafra loved to do overdubs.
So, feasibly, this Fresh Fruit for Rotting Vegetables remix could be the start of a few more projects along the same lines.
I don't know. This one turned into a lot more work than anticipated. We prefer to call it the 2022 mix.
Right.
Because of the, you know, how some people think remix, you know, means that addition of other instruments. I mean, one of the problems is we had had someone transfer the tape to digital files, very high res digital files, but they didn't document which track was which.
Mm.
So at the start, when we decided to go with Chris Lord Alge, we sent them all the files. Oh, actually, no, maybe it was a Chemical Warfare. I can't remember us. But he came back, which vocal's the main vocal and which this and which is the main, you know, all this. And we looked and none of it was marked correctly. So Klaus and I spent about 3 months going through all the multi-tracks and trying to figure out which, you know, vocal was the lead vocal.
Right. Okay. So there's multiple performances there. So we could actually, you know, there could be different versions potentially.
Yeah, Biafra being the lead singer would take up 4 tracks. You know, I mean, I got 2 or 3, Klaus was 2, and the drums were, I guess, 8. Is that right? No. Yeah.
So 4 tracks, like, they'd all be different kind of phrasing? Would they all sound similar?
Experiments? He would sing it and then go back and this is very common in the recording that a singer would sing it through. And then they go back and do a comp vocal, like take lines from different things and versions.
Right. Okay.
And what I mean, Klaus would, you know, they do the basic tracks, you get the drums and the bass together. And then basically you need to pick a track that has a good feel. And then, and you can't typically overdub much drums because, you know, the toms and cymbals are all ringing. But if you know, if the drums are basically good, then you know, Klaus was a very good player. There'd be some minor notes here and there that he'd miss, and those could be punched in. They'd be punched in on the track that he recorded on.
Right.
And the same thing with my guitar part. I mean, I would play a live guitar during the recording, and that actually a lot of them on Fresh Fruit, we kept a lot of them. And then I actually overdubbed all the guitar parts onto a second track. And they're mixed together a little bit. That's where, like, you'll hear the human element, shall we say? Because the tracking guitar, like the one I played, the tracking guitar, is not always up to snuff. Because the important thing was get the drum and bass, the rhythm down.
Yeah.
And whether I was on point or not was totally chance. And even if I played really great and the rhythm section wasn't there, that track got thrown in, is on the cutting room floor.
So it's interesting, you and Klaus, it's almost like an autopsy. You had to go into these tapes that you haven't seen in so long and try to remember exactly what was pieced together and how, and the decisions of 40 years ago.
Well, actually, I like I said, because I worked so much at the time, I didn't realize the name of the game in the music business. But you know, basically, Oliver and I kind of produced the record, and all the overdubs are in my handwriting. The track sheets are in my handwriting. We did all the work. But what we had to do is actually we put up the 16 track. You know, we both have Pro Tools, and then we put the original mix mm-hmm. on top, and then we would go through and see where it lined up.
Oh, that's smart.
Yeah. So it took a lot of, the issue though, is that the original mix and the multi-track were at slightly different speeds.
Oh, really?
The analog tape machines.
Okay.
Yeah, there's actually some final records out there back from the 80s that are 1% too fast because they were made off of a bad master tape.
Oh.
A duplicate that was 1% fast.
Yeah, I think because Klaus was on the show some time ago, and I think I remember he said it was tuned to like E flat or something like that, that you couldn't tune to the actual record because it was off key.
But basically some of the old vinyl Fresh Fruit versions were made off of a bad duplicate that is 1% fast, so it sounds a little chipmunky. But you know what, there may be some people that was the first record they bought and they can't stand it at the right speed and key.
Yeah, absolutely. who came up with the name of the album, Fresh Fruit for Rotting Vegetables?
I believe that was Biafra.
Okay. All right. Was it always going to be that? Were there other titles that were thrown around at the time? Do you remember?
I don't remember that. But I did find one of the sheets when we were working on the sequencing. And so I had like three or four sequences in my handwriting. And then I guess we had cassettes we would. People would go home and we ended up, voting on them. Like what sequence we want the records, what sequencing is.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And I think that's been a huge advantage of Dead Kennedys, because the way that the album flows from song to song, and like you say, the sequencing is a critical step.
Yeah. Well, actually that's one of the things I've discovered. I have a very, very good talent for, like we're touring, DH, Pellegro, and Klaus and I are touring with Skip, the Dead Kennedy stuff. And we've been doing it for over a decade now. And I make the song list. And we finally, a couple of years ago, we hit on one that's just an amazing sequence. You know, it starts strong, it's got a curve and in strong, and you know, we change it up to keep ourselves interested, but everybody, you know, we all agree, like it just doesn't have the impact of the original sequence. And then I realized, oh, okay, this is because I feel the music. So playing on stage, it's like, okay, this is kind of like getting too slow here, so we need to swap songs around. And So a couple of years of swapping the songs around live, we got this super, super sequence. And we can swap songs out of the sequence that are similar.
Right.
You know, similar. Like Buzz Bomb and Insight can be traded. We have some other songs that do, you know, but they stay in the same spot. You know, changing the order around is we do it every once in a while when we get been on the road too much, but
yeah.
So back in the vinyl days, you know, you start with a strong song and have the first side have a lot of strong, and then you end with a strong song on the side A, and then side B, you have to start with a strong song and end with a strong song. And side B, you can put a little bit more, you know, your jam band stuff.
Yeah.
Let that have less song construction, shall we say.
I was told that the aim is to get people to flip it over or to play it again. So the last song on each side is super important to get people the energy and the will to do that.
And that kind of changed with CDs, though. Now you kind of have to put all your good songs in the first five.
Yeah.
Because people don't usually get past the five.
well, we're a vinyl record podcast, Ray. Do you still listen to records? Do you still have a record collection?
I have a record collection, but I've transferred most of them to digital.
Hmm. Okay.
So I listen because I have an iPod that I can take on the road.
Right.
You know, we used to carry a little CD Walkman.
Mm-hmm.
And like a CD wallet,
the folder. I remember those. Yes.
Just yeah. Right. So hundreds it was like 25 CDs. Records on it. Yeah. So I made a lot of my own sequences. Like, you know, I have a Merle Haggard sequence and a Duke Ellington sequence that used to be on CD, mm-hmm. and I sequenced those. And then, you know, the CDs were easy to transfer. And I have a lot of records. Like actually, I have a cassette player plugged into my digital system, and I had a lot of cassettes. Used to carry cassettes too around before CDs. That's what it was. Didn't really take vinyl on the road that much.
Right. In your collection, anything interesting vinyl nerds would go ape shit over? Any test pressings? Any DK memorabilia from the day?
We'll be back after these messages.
Hey everyone, I'm here to talk to you about Seems Easy record sleeve repair strips. Ever find a record in a used bin where the vinyl is gorgeous, but the sleeve has this ugly split and is even falling completely apart? Well, that's okay, grab it anyway, because with Seems Easy record sleeve repair strips, you can fix that right up. Seems Easy record repair strips repair seam splits from the inside, so it doesn't affect the appearance of a record sleeve, but it does make it functional again. With Seems Easy, records can now slide in and out like new. Turn a $5 used record into a $50 functioning collectible. Just ask your local record shop for Seems Easy strips, and if they're not in stock, go to seemseasy.com. That's Seems Easy with two Z's. Seems Easy record sleeve repair strips. Seems easy because it is. Oh, and hey, record nerds, don't forget to clean your records with the very best and safest record cleaner, the Groove Washer. Make your records look and sound their very best and store them with confidence using the new Groove Washer Groove Guard record sleeves. You gotta try this out. It makes a huge difference to the quality of your vinyl experience. Ask for the Groove Washer by name at your local record store and accept no substitutes. Or head over to groovewasher.com and use discount code VINYLGUIDE. 10.
All hail the Groove Washer.
That's groovewasher.com, discount code VINYLGUIDE10.
Now we return to the program, already in progress.
No limits. In your collection, anything interesting vinyl nerds would go ape shit over? Any test pressings? Any DK memorabilia from the day?
Oh, yeah. Well, actually, I have a lot of the Dead Kennedy test pressings, some from the 80s and some of the recent ones. I'm really into music more mm-hmm. than the physical that much, though I do like the 12-inch LP cover. I have the Beatles VJ record.
Oh yeah.
So and I have some of the, some of it might be rare, who knows. I don't know.
It probably is. Most of them I don't know if you've kept up on, you know, the collectability of records these days, but many of the records that you're on go for hundreds of dollars.
Oh, okay. I do have a box, not a box, maybe 10 of the original Fresh Fruit covers with the heads on the band.
Yeah, that's a collectible one.
Yeah, but it doesn't really have the vinyl on the inside, so I don't know.
That's almost secondary when it comes to those particular covers. I noticed on this new 2022 remix, the cutoff heads are back. For a while, those were swapped out with the.
They're back.
Yeah.
You sure?
Let me show you. Can you see my camera?
No, the heads are cut off.
No, that's what I said. The heads are cut off. But
oh yeah,
this one was also replaced with pictures of kind of a couple of older ladies, if I recall, for some time.
The story of that photo is Klaus found it at a thrift store, at a garage sale, and it was put on the record, and maybe a year or two after the record, turns out it's a band that was still together. And they owned a recording studio in L.A. and they were a Christian band. So they through their attorney, demanded some money and cease and desist, which we did cease and desist and paid them some money for harming their reputation.
as I understand, the version with the heads was the one that the first version that they reacted to. Then the second version came out with their heads cut off, and they still had a problem with that. So then it was swapped out for there was a placeholder cover, and then there was a picture of a couple of old ladies that seemed to take up that space for years.
I don't know the story on that. I mean, I just I don't know if they complained or not. I don't know if the record labels got gun shy. Or litigation shy and took the whole photo out. But it's mostly been the heads cut off is the main that's been there forever, as far as I can remember. I do know what you're talking about, but those are off. But basically, the ones with the head on are the first, the original first pressings. Mm-hmm. But it was out for about a year or two before they got changed.
Okay. I also noticed the cover. There's just the band name Dead Kennedys is different than the original. What was the discussion on that?
Well, the idea is if you're sitting across the room and have the records sitting by you could tell them apart.
Right.
We'd tell them apart. And also, personally, this is my personal artistic, the goth lettering on the original is like so, so out of style.
Yeah.
we're not a goth band, nor are we a heavy metal band, and they keep putting it on merchandise, and it's like I go, it's like no thank you, I do not want a sample of the goth lettering. Sorry.
It does seem a little Norwegian death metal-y.
Norwegian death metal-y,
The DK logo, it's synonymous with punk music. Does the band still control that? Like, for example, whenever a DK patch or shirt is sold at a Hot Topic, does that benefit the band?
Yeah, but as a matter of fact, to clear up the story, the DK logo, I created the first logo.
Mm-hmm.
And Klaus can verify. And we have a photo from 1979. On my guitar, I put four pieces of tape. The D and the K with straight lines, the D being stylized. There's a 1970 where I actually made an armband with the DK logo. So there's a thing, some other people claim they created it, but what it is, it's the four lines is the key to it. And then, an artist, made a nice logo version.
Right.
With the 3D and then also a certain other member of the band claims that they created it. But Klaus found a photo of me having it in 1979. We started in late 78. So I have a guitar pick guard in my basement that has the four lines, which is what people, draw on the on the you know, underneath bridges.
Yeah,
listening to Norwegian black metal and Brian DK logos getting confused on the music. And the other thing, like that record, there's a 8-page booklet inside. Oh, and also, I guess people don't. Also, some people have asked, but also the original poster is in the 12-inch.
I was going to talk about that. And last night, I pulled out this poster and put it next to my original poster. It's pretty much the same size, dimensions, no edits. Is this a really good scan, or do you still have the original poster artwork?
During the lawsuit with Alternative Tentacles, when they skimmed $76,000 from the band, they refused to give back the band our original artwork. So things were scanned. I had a whole bunch of original pressings, untouched, you know, virgin artwork that was scanned. The poster, I believe, Cherry Red in London had a high quality print version of it.
Got it.
So actually Fresh Fruit, since Cherry Red owns it outside of the United States, mm-hmm. they had all the original artwork. It's basically things after Fresh Fruit that the you know, the whiny person wanted to take his ball home and wouldn't give it back to the band, which is, you know, creepy. Anyway, so yeah, so that's and we worked on it. I had a friend help me that was an editor that worked at UC Berkeley Press, and we had like different scans and different processing, and we worked on it to try to get it to come out, because she was used to doing art books, so mm-hmm. she helped advise on the images and stuff.
It looks really clean, and again, I held them right next to one another. And yeah, it's all the same artwork. There's no edits. And the booklet is really quite nice. The quotes and the story of Fresh Fruit, you know, something nice to read while you listen along. So a lot of care has gone into this package.
Yeah, I don't know if have you seen the CD version?
I have not.
It's actually, they have these CD things that are little hardback books. That's what we started with. That was it's 28 pages. Many of those photos were not available on the internet. There's a lot of new photos. Mm-hmm.
CD booklet different than the record booklet?
Well, what's different is the record booklet has 4 per page. Like, actually, they're the same size.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah, the graphic artist that was helping me, she came up with that checkerboard pattern thing. But it's basically each one of those squares would be a page in the CD booklet. Have you seen the hardback CD, any CD in the hardback booklet?
No, I walked right past the CDs and grabbed the record.
it's pretty amazing. They're like a little mini art book for your coffee table.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and so we got a bunch of quotes from a bunch of musicians to say. It's pretty mm-hmm. one of my favorites is Youth of Killing Joke. I don't know if you read that one.
Yes. Yeah.
And some cool, you know, some cool photos. I spent a lot of time tracking down photographers. Chester Simpson, F. Stop Fitzgerald. He had passed away, but we found his widow. And
F-Stop Fitzgerald.
F-Stop Fitzgerald. Yeah, he was, you know, hanging out the local scene. Some other, Edward Culver from L.A. stuff. And then there's a bunch of people we just couldn't find, you know.
And I noticed that on the back, you know, there's a note that says, if you recognize an uncredited photograph or image and know the identity, please contact the record label. So that's nice. You're trying to, you know, put all the bits of history together here.
Yeah, we actually spent a lot of time tracking. I mean, I know Sue Brisk, that used to live in San Francisco, did a lot of photography of the punk, you know, Mab days, the Mutants and stuff. And we're still in touch. So she was in New York, and I called her to see if she could remember, you know, who these photographers are. And then also, like, we gave the, you know, Chester, like, do you even know who any, you know, we found one or two, but that way.
With the reputation and the history of Dead Kennedys, who have you been surprised is a fan of the band?
Oh, wow. I don't know. I'd have to think about that one. I mean, because we're basically in the United States, Dead Kennedys is a kind of an underground band. We were never top 40.
Sure.
Like we're in the UK. And what I found is either I found a lot of people that have heard of the band, but don't know the music. But I've also found a lot of people never even heard of the band. You know, we're not Bruce Springsteen, you know?
No, but for our generation, I'm going to lump me in with you, even though I'm a bit younger, but, you know, Dead Kennedys are very important. And now, as we get older, people are coming of age. In Australia, we've got a prime minister that's an open fan of a lot of the pub rock that people here grew up with. And so, you know, Radio Birdman and those sort of bands, he's a big fan. He's very vocal about that. I would imagine there are some very powerful fans of the band that may have made it known that they are fans of Dead Kennedys.
I think somebody, I remembered John Stewart.
Oh, yeah.
John Stewart, I mean, but that, I mean, in the, he was, what was the place? City Gardens in Trenton, New Jersey. City Gardens, great. Great venue. It was kind of in between Philadelphia and New York, and drew people off from, like, you know, middle of New Jersey. And there's a picture of him, supposedly. I don't know whether it's photoshopped, but he did used to go there a lot. And and I've met John Waters, but actually, when we back in the day at the 930 Club, he was backstage and got to talk to him and stuff. Gave me a business card. I don't know where it is.
I could totally see John Stewart being not only just a fan of the band, but also inspired just knowing his sensibilities.
Yeah, but I'm trying to think of something that somebody you wouldn't expect, you know. Wouldn't expect, you know. Mel Gibson? I don't know. No.
Yeah.
Oprah Winfrey? Maybe not.
That would be a surprise. Yes. Yeah. Okay, everyone. It's Too Drunk Too Far.
We're all going to give each one of you a condom.
Yes. Everyone, look under your seats. There's a rotting turkey carcass for everyone. Now you've got this remix, 2022 remix of Fresh Fruit for Rotting Vegetables. Any thoughts about perhaps the same treatment for something like Plastic Surgery Disasters or In God We Trust? Is that something that, is there a universe where that would happen?
There's some thought, but in, you know, in our opinion, we were much more experienced and the engineers were much experienced, and those records were had much more resolution.
Right.
You know, separation and resolution and gelled. They don't have the boxy sound. I mean, there's, of course, you know, every artist, I think, you know, does something, and then when they come back and look at it, like, oh, I would have done this different and this different and this different. But you know, I mean, my favorite Dead Kennedys record is Plastic Surgery Disasters. You know, and I actually like the sound of that. I like the sound of that better than Frankenchrist. Frankenchrist is kind of like Biafra got reverb happy.
Right.
Like, there's like reverb on. I was not involved in the production side of Frankenchrist and Bedtime.
I'd love to hear a remix of Frankenchrist. That was my entry point into the band. So I'd love to hear a new angle. Oh, with
little less reverb on it, perhaps.
Sure. Well, look, that's that, the sensibility of the day was those big Lexicon reverbs, and you know, having, you know, being able to make a version for the ages that isn't as dated as it was is a fine prospect.
Yeah, when that's kind of. I mean, I like a lot of my psychedelic playing on that record.
Yeah.
A reason I like Plastic Surgery because it has the psychedelic part and the hardcore part kind of both on the same record.
I understand at one point Polydor was interested in signing Dead Kennedys. Is that true?
Yes. We after Fresh Fruit. I don't know. Do you know this story? How we got Fresh Fruit recorded?
Yeah, I think I know the story. But please share.
Yeah, we did the single California Uberalis and Man with the Dogs, and then that would be played in New York to 20 people. But Bob Last was there, who owned Fast Products in Edinburgh. I don't know if you're familiar with them.
Yep.
Fast Products, they have Gang of Four, Mekongs, Human League. It was a very prestigious label, and he called me up and like, I want to put this out in UK, and sure. And then you know, we were like, it was very successful in the UK for an American punk band that was not the Ramones. Because, you know, only English or only UK, British people can do punk. It's kind of the attitude attitude back then. And then a booking agent called us up and wanted us to tour England. And we said, sure. And then he called back like, well, you know, with a single, it's not economically possible. So let me see if I can get you financing for an LP. And that's how Cherry Red got involved. And yes, there was Cherry Red's first big record. You know, the budget was $10,000. And I suggested to the band, like, let's each take $1,000 because this is the last money we're ever going to see from this record. And spend $6,000 making it, which is what we did. And we found Oliver's 16-track Studio Mobius. He'd never done punk rock. So Fresh Fruit was a big hit. So our manager, who was the guy, the booking agent guy, was like, well, let's look for a deal and see what, you know, what recording budget can we get? And so he opened up bidding from the record labels, and Polydor was one of the people. We went out to lunch with the guy. I still have the in the archives, I still have the contract they sent over. We went out to lunch with the guy, Tony somebody. He signed some other people. But what happened is I tried to call him a couple of times to ask some questions about the contract. And he didn't answer. I didn't return the calls. So I said, well, that's not going to work.
Yeah. If you can't get their attention now when they want you, what's it going to be like once they have you?
Yeah. And so what happened is, I know. And then what happens, we went with Static Records with Laurie Dunn. Laurie Dunn used to work at Virgin Publishing. And when Cherry Red Records came out, we signed a publishing deal with Virgin Publishing. Richard Branson, and you know, they have a townhouse in London. So when we used to tour England, we'd stay at their townhouse recording studio, where I got to meet Brian May one day.
Ooh.
He was in there doing stuff. He's taller than I am.
And richer.
And richer. and we're about the same on being a gentleman.
Yeah, I would say that.
Give me that, please. So Laurie Dunham's at Virgin Publishing, and he started the label. So that Plastic Surgery came out on Static Records and stuff. And in the States, basically they were trying to kill punk rock. They were trying to do new wave and no punk rock. And it's kind of amazing because we've been out touring and we cross paths with like the Circle Jerks and DOA and the Descendants. Mm-hmm. You know, all these great bands from back in the day that were all on DIY labels. Nobody was on, the only band on a major was Ramones. And it's amazing, you know, we're all doing better than we did back in the day. You know, Circle Jerks are, you know, drawing tons of people.
I just saw them about a week ago. Yeah.
Yeah. But they're down there with Pennywise. Or
that's right. That's
yeah, right.
Right.
Yeah. Pennywise. Yeah. We did a tour like that in South America with the Offspring. You know, Yeah, that turns out that they're big fans. Noodles and Dexter are big fans. They saw us when they were 14.
Yeah.
Yeah. They were at the famous Longshoreman Hall in Wilmington, LA, which was a police riot.
That's got to make an impression.
Yeah. And I met Dave Grohl, and we played, I guess it was 1984, we played the Washington Mall. It's a counter thing to, I think, the Beach Boys playing for Reagan.
Right.
And he says his aunt took him there when he was 14, took him to the mall to see us. And that was like his first rock concert.
Right.
Yeah.
So what an introduction.
Yeah.
So what else is happening with you, Ray? Dead Kennedys and otherwise?
Oh, well, I can make a plug for myself. Mm-hmm. Skip and I have a band called The Killer Smiles.
Mm-hmm.
And that record actually came out this month too, but the record label's figuring out how to do promotion.
Right. Okay.
But it's, because of some of the trolls on the internet, like, why don't Klaus and DH and you come out with new music? But the fact is DH has a band, Pellagro. He has like 3 CDs out that are really good. Klaus has his more solo, more abstract, resonant type stuff. Has 2 or 3 records that I don't know if they're being distributed now. And you know, Skip and I did this Killer Smiles record that has had we've had some false starts. We were on a label that kind of went bankrupt.
Mm-hmm.
So now it's on Pig Records, actually. I don't know if you're familiar with them.
Yeah.
PIG Records. And he actually, you should check him out. He's very focused on vinyl.
Oh, good. Okay. Because I know Killer Smiles was available on CD. So is this what you're saying? Is they're about to do a vinyl issue of Killer Smiles?
Well, the vinyl, yeah, it's in the pipeline. Unfortunately, it's going to not come out till 2023. But right. David, who runs Pig Records, says, you know, he sells 3 times as much vinyl as CDs.
And, yeah.
And streaming, he doesn't really pay attention to. There's other people at the label. But the problem is there's not that many vinyl plants now, and you have to kind of get in line. You know, I mean, our release, September 30th, I mean, this stuff was ready like 9 months ago. The artwork and the mastering was all done, but it's just getting, you know, we had all the releases lined up with the vinyl pressing plant, getting the stuff out.
Right. Well, look, Ray, I do want to thank you for spending time with us. As I mentioned, Dead Kennedys were an absolutely pivotal band for me, and I know so many of our listeners, helped shape our views of the world. And having this 2022 remix, I think is a really interesting addition to the record collection. And again, I know there's lots of purists out there that just want the old pressings, that just want to get the ones on Cherry Red, the original ones from the 80s. And that's fine. Those exist. Go ahead and grab one. They sound fine. They work fine. But this 2022 mix is a really interesting view of the music from a different angle. On my system, it really kind of brought out some new colors and some really good separation. You can now really get into what each of the instruments is doing a little bit easier than the old mix. And and I thought it was fine. And it's you know, it's allowed me to revisit an old friend here. Yeah. So
it's like and the energy's still there. It still rocks out.
Absolutely. Ray, I hope this is the start of perhaps a few more, because I'd love to see some of the other works undergo similar treatment, but we'll just have to see if that's in the cards.
Yeah. Okay, take care. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Ray. Take care, mate. Cheers. All right, there we go. Mr. East Bay Ray of Dead Kennedys celebrating the 2022 remix of Fresh Fruit for Rotting Vegetables. Again, you could A and B them back and forth. Listen to them, figure out which one you like. You may like different ones on different days. Who knows? But they'll both be available. I think they're both excellent. They both have a space in my collection for sure. And by the way, I do want to humbly request folks who enjoy this interview, subscribe to the podcast, and even help support the show at patreon.com
/vinyl guide. Commercial-free versions are up there. Extended interviews are up there. Lots of extras. Patreon.com/vinyl guide. And that is it for this episode of The Vinyl Guide. Thank you so much for tuning in. Please share these episodes on your social media. Put them on Facebook, tweet them out on Twitter. Tell your meathead friends about this podcast. Show them how to access it on that smartphone of theirs. That is always appreciated. Leave us a positive review on iTunes. 5 out of 5, or what does Spotify do? 10 out of 10, whatever. Give us the most. Say something nice. Make us blush. That is always appreciated. And we'll be back shortly with a brand new episode. So until we talk next time, get out there and buy some records, people. Cheers.
That's it for this episode of The Vinyl Guide. Send your thoughts to Nate@thevinylguide.com or follow or tag us on Instagram @vinylguide. Until next time, keep spinning.